Following is a debate that was sponsored by the Montana Farmers Union, the United States Cattlemen's Association, the Montana Cattlemen's Association, and the Northern Plains Resource Council between the candidates for the Montana U.S. House seat. The event was held Saturday evening, May 2nd, and it was pre-recorded as a virtual debate. The debate was organized in two segments, the first of which featured the Republican candidates, Joe Dooling, John Ivankovich, Deborah Lamb, Mark McGinley, and Corey Stapleton. Matt Rosendale did not participate in this debate. The second segment featured the Democratic candidates, Kathleen Williams and Tom Winter. The debate was moderated by Jim Sargent.
Live from the Northern Broadcasting System, welcome to another election year candidate debate. The Northern News Network, in cooperation with this radio station, proudly presents this important broadcast as part of our ongoing coverage of this year's election. Now we take you live to the debate site and join our announcers on location.
The Big Sky's farmers and ranchers, the heart and soul of Montana, the heart and soul of tonight's congressional primary debate. Good evening and welcome to the Farmers Union Congressional Primary Debate on the Northern News Network. I'm Tom Schultz, host of Voices of Montana. That's the state's longest-running daily statewide talk show heard on many of these Northern News Network stations. Tonight, a virtual debate between the primary candidates for Congress. On the Republican side, that's a crowded field. Six candidates in all, although State Auditor Matt Rosendale is not participating tonight. But those who are showing up include Secretary of State Corey Stapleton, Lewis and Clark County Rancher Joe Dooling, Mike McGinley, a retired Army Guard Lieutenant Colonel, John Ivankovich, he's a Republican from Butte, and a former state GOP party chairwoman, Deborah Lamb. On the Democratic side, a much smaller field, with Kathleen Williams, who lost the House race in 2018 to incumbent Greg Gianforte, who's not in the race this year, he's running for governor, and then Tom Winter, he's a Missoula Democratic state legislator. Up next, we'll be joined by Montana Farmers Union President Walter Schweitzer for a bit of a rundown on what we might expect tonight from the candidates. This is the Farmers Union Congressional Primary Debate on the Northern News Network.
Howdy, Schweitzer, President of Montana Farmers Union. The primary election is around the corner. Before you head to the polls, know where candidates for Congress stand on rural and ag issues. Montana Farmers Union is proud to host a virtual primary debate with U.S. House candidates on May 2nd at 7 p.m. to discuss issues like truth and labeling, trade, health care, and more. Watch the debate on your local ABC, Fox, or SWX TV station, or listen on this network.
Let's face it.
Hello, I'm Matt Kelly, Health Officer for the Gallatin City County Health Department. Governor Steve Bullock this week issued a directive to all Montanans requiring them to stay at home starting Saturday, March 28th. That means staying at home as much as possible, except for essential activities. Those essential activities include things like movement necessary for health and safety, seeking medical care or picking up prescriptions, and when necessary, going to the grocery store for food and supplies. You can also go to work if your job is considered an essential business or operation, and you can care for others who cannot otherwise complete essential tasks on their own. The governor's order also allows us to go outside to get exercise, fresh air, and sunshine, just so long as you're strictly maintaining physical distance from people with whom you do not live. All over our county and our state, our healthcare providers and emergency responders are sacrificing to serve us all. My request to all of you is to think about those men and women going to work every day, sacrificing for us. Please make the sacrifice for them so we can slow the spread of this virus and buy time for those working so hard around the clock. We are Montanans. We stand by one another, and we can all make daily decisions to create the distance to defeat this virus. When in doubt, stay home.
Are you having a good night?
I am having a good night. You know, I want to thank the candidates who are willing to take an hour out of their busy schedule to discuss rural and ag issues. And, you know, because this was a pre-recorded virtual debate, we were willing to accommodate any schedule to make sure everyone could come. And I am disappointed in Rosendale and Gianforte who were not willing to take the time to discuss rural and ag issues.
Yeah, I think that's fair. And candidates will be noting that, I'm sure. So ahead of this one, what do you think are the top election issues that farmers and ranchers are looking at? Are they going to consider, obviously, this pandemic's influence here, but what top issues going into 2020? And I don't know if it's different than in previous election years, but what are your thoughts on that?
Well, you know, the coronavirus has really put a microscope on our food supply chain. And you know, as many of the candidates noted in their campaigns, it's a broken system. And I think it's starting, I mean, with the latest price gouging that these multinational packers did against the consumers and the producers was so obvious that now everyone is talking about it. And it's good to see both parties realizing that we have a problem here that needs to be solved.
Yeah, and I'm sure we'll get some of that context tonight. I'm looking forward to that as you are. What about the field, Walter? You've got a large Republican field. Five of the six candidates are here tonight, and then a couple of the Democratic candidates, too. So, you know, what's your professional position there? Most Montanans, I think, politicians or not, they have some connection to agriculture. And as you said, it's good that we get this major focus tonight.
I'm just really glad that we have Jim Sargent, who is a referee. I watched him rep a lot of high school basketball and football games. When you're trying to keep five different candidates on task during a debate, it's a good thing we got a referee for a moderator.
And Jim's quite an ag guy, too. I know that for a fact.
Yes, he sure is. He understands agriculture and family farms as good or better than anybody.
You know, we just have just a few more seconds here, but there's not been a ton of debates this year. And in this position in particular, it's pretty dang important. So thank you for doing this. What was the genesis about getting this organized?
Well, you know, we started back in December doing this, and I've been just really disappointed in the last few years that the debates that we do have rarely talked about rural and ag issues. And so I just wanted to make sure we got a debate where our candidates had to speak to those issues.
All right. Thank you, Walter. I know we'll talk to you after tonight's debate. I appreciate your time. And that debate does begin in a moment. So we'll catch up with you in a moment. And back with more here. This is the Montana Farmers Union Congressional Primary Debate on the Northern News Network.
This portion of the Radio Goodness on KGVM is underwritten by the Bozeman Folklore Society. BFS is an all-volunteer, nonprofit organization dedicated to promoting, preserving, enjoying, and sharing the music, dance, arts, crafts, and skills of traditional cultures. BFS hosts two contra dances monthly for dancers of all skill levels, contra dance parties for experienced dancers, concerts featuring acoustic music from a variety of musical genres, including bluegrass, folk, and jazz, featuring local and national acts, international and Scottish dances, Scottish ceilidhs, and more. There's more information about the group online at bozemanfolklore.org or on their Bozeman Folklore Society Facebook page, including a schedule of upcoming events.
The Army National Guard plays a vital role in your community. We're on the front lines supporting essential personnel, first responders, law enforcement, and medical professionals, delivering food, supplies, and medicine, keeping communities safe, making a difference. During emergencies, we're always ready, always there. Learn more about part-time service in the Army National Guard at nationalguard.com.
Sponsored by the Montana Army National Guard, aired by the Montana Broadcasters Association at this station.
Are you looking for doors, windows, and other items for your house? Did you know these items and many more are available at your local Habitat for Humanity ReStore at discounted prices? Anyone with a tape measure and plans can visit the store to see if they can fill your needs. If you don't find what you're looking for, you can check back frequently as their inventory is constantly changing. The local Habitat for Humanity ReStore is located at 230 Arden Drive in Belgrade. More information is available at their website at habitatbozeman.org.
631. Hello again, I'm Tom Schultz, host of Voices of Montana. The format for tonight's congressional primary virtual debate is going to be 75 minutes for the five Republican candidates, followed by a short two-minute intermission, and then 45 minutes for questions for the two Democratic primary candidates. The intent is that each candidate gets to respond to at least five questions, and they'll all be under a time constraint, but rebuttals are going to be allowed, and they'll be managed by the moderator, who is a veteran broadcaster and a longtime agricultural and rural Montana advocate. That's Jim Sargent. The debate tonight, carried by Coles Media, and it's brought to you in part by the Northern Plains Resource Council, Montana Cattlemen's Association, and the United States Cattlemen's Association, and sponsors of our local hometown stations. And stations, we pause now 10 seconds for a chance to identify yourself on the Northern News Network. Stations.
You are tuned to KGVM Bozeman. We are the audio mirror of the Gallatin Valley at 95.9 FM and online at kgvm.org.
We'll have more back here at the Northern News Network studios following tonight's debate. But right now, let's go to Jim Sargent for the Montana Farmers Union Congressional Primary Debate.
Thank you for joining us as we kick off our debate here for this evening. Earlier this week, we had a chance to visit with the candidates and determine who would go first for our opening statements. We will start with Deborah Lamb. Deborah?
Well, thank you. Good evening. I appreciate our hosts and producers for this virtual debate. The opportunity to speak to you tonight about these important agricultural issues is so critical because agriculture is the backbone of our Montana economy, and our farmers and ranchers have been struggling for the past few years through no fault of their own. You know, my husband and I live in Park County, and while I didn't grow up on a ranch, I was raised in a small rural farming community. And what I found is that our shared values are what bring us together, like hard work, helping our neighbors, perseverance in the face of adversity, conservation and stewardship. And as we navigate the tough challenges that have been compounded by this virus pandemic, we have learned where we have weaknesses and where we can seek remedies. We've risen up together, helping our neighbors, creating new opportunities, exposing the need for greater food security, and removing federal regulations that are getting in our way. And we will come out of this stronger. You know, I am ready to serve all Montanans as your next Congresswoman and have crisscrossed the state on my listening tour and forging solutions together. I will take the oath of office seriously, following the Constitution to return power to the states, because we know what's best for Montana, not Washington, D.C. And I will be there fighting hard for you. Thank you.
Thank you, Deborah. Let's go to an opening statement with Corey. Corey?
Good evening, everyone. I wish we were in person in Great Falls, my hometown. These are different times, strange times, and so we adapt. Both my wife and I graduated from Great Falls High back in 1986. So I always enjoy not just coming to Great Falls, but meeting with the farmers and the ag producers in the area. You know, in all of my years of the state Senate, I served on the Agriculture Committee and have continued that strong work supporting ag, supporting natural resources, supporting all that development while I've been a member of the land board. I'm a fourth generation Montanan. It is so critical that when we only have one congressional seat, that we have a congressman who understands the way that the world works. I'm the only military veteran in Montana who's elected to statewide office. I've served my country overseas. I've served in uniform. I've served in the state Senate. And as your Secretary of State, we've held our elections to the highest security. We have improved all the business operations. We've just really shown a lot of good government. So I'd love to be your congressman. I look forward to this debate tonight. I think we need to elect a congressman that not only understands how the world works, but understands the eastern Montana and the western Montana, the cities and the rural, the ag and the financial, the healthcare, the manufacturing, the tourism. All of our industries matter, and I look forward to a great debate.
Thank you, Corey. Now let's turn it over to Mark for your opening statement. Mark?
Thank you. Hi, I'm Mark McGinley, and I'm a candidate for the United States Congress because I honestly believe that I am the best qualified candidate to serve Montana. I don't say that to disparage my opponents at all. I believe that my resume supports this claim. But this is what I want you to know about me today. I am a team player. I seek common ground. I like to find solutions that are mutually beneficial to everyone. But I want you to be clear that I have a solid core. If you push against my boundaries, you can expect me to push back. And my core boundary, ideals are three. My core values are, I believe in God. I believe in my family. and I believe in my country. Now, if you attack my family or my country, you can expect me to push back. If you attack my God or my faith or my religion, knock yourself out. God is big enough, he can take care of himself. But why do I say this? Because I want to go to Congress to work for you, not to pick a fight. And there are too many people, frankly, in Washington who are bickering and fighting, and we're too concerned about who gets the credit and who gets the blame. I want to go to work for you, and it is my responsibility as your congressman to represent you. You are the employer. I am the employee, and this is my interview. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Mark. And now next, we'll turn it over to John. John, you're up next.
Thanks, Jim. Yeah, my name is John Ivankovich, born and raised in Butte, Montana. Absolutely no political experience whatsoever. Started getting a little bit political on social media when I had a really good idea what I felt for the Berkeley Pit. And I found out that my hometown, who is normally very Democrat, when I was trying to get in contact with one of our senators, I think we know who he is. I found out real fast that the Democratic Party is not really friends with oil and gas and in the Senate race. And when I realized that who was going to be our front runner for this seat, for the lone seat for the state, I knew something had to happen. I knew I had to try. I couldn't just be some keyboard warrior. I had to try and do something. And so I decided to run. And I believe that What I'm bringing to this race is I'm trying to show labor is no longer, the Democratic Party is no longer the friend to labor. We have the automated revolution is coming, and we need to understand that. And there is a real opportunity right now for the Republican Party to embrace labor and labor to embrace the Republican Party when this takes place. And so this was why I got involved in this. And I did it primarily because I know that if the front runner, who is the one person that decided he didn't want to come here. I'm done?
That's your time. Yes, thank you.
Okay.
Let's turn it over to Joe now for his opening statement. Joe?
Thank you, Sarge. I want to thank the Farmers Union, Walt Schweitzer, and the U.S. Cattleman, Jess Peterson. I grew up judging livestock against Jess Peterson, and I'd say he probably beat me more times than I beat him. But I want to thank you guys for that. Let me introduce myself. My name's Joe Dooling. I live in the Helena Valley. I grew up down in Dillon. I went to Montana State University. My wife, Julie, and I run a farm with our son, Tyler. My wife is a representative of for Broadwater County in Eastern Lewis and Clark County. As the only production farmer rancher to be running for Congress this cycle, I really appreciate this debate on agriculture. And I'm excited to be at the one and only debate we're going to have. As a Trump-appointed member of the State Farm Agency Committee for the USDA, I saw this farm crisis coming, and that's what inspired me to run. When I was a kid, I remember all the bankruptcies that happened around us. All my neighbors lost their farms in 3 years when I was a kid. And I understood that impact that it had to that small community down in Dillon. And so that's what inspired me to run, because I do believe that folks need that – Congress is going to fix this problem, and somebody has to who understands production agriculture needs to be at the table. I'm the former Lewis and Clark County GOP chair. I served there for a period of time. I have a reputation of fighting against the establishment. And if I go to Congress, I'll fight for Montana and not fight for the party. Thank you.
Thank you. Very good opening statements. And we're going to dive right into the questions. They are mainly pertaining to agriculture, as you might expect with our friends with the USCA, MCA, Northern Plains, and MFU. So we will start with Deborah. You will have the first question coming your way, and it is this. Under the threat of retaliatory tariffs, the 2015 Congress voted to repeal country of origin labeling, known as COOL. This repeal applied only for beef and pork. All other food productions still have COOL. Soon after the repeal, multinational packers started putting a product of USA labeling on beef and pork that was imported and repackaged. This was misleading to consumers. Will you support reinstating mandatory country of origin labeling? Deborah?
Yes, thank you. I absolutely do support the COOL labeling. We have a right to know where our food is coming from, and I'm very concerned about the multinational beef coming in and getting mixed in with our very good, high-quality Montana beef. You know, there might be an interim fix until we can get COOL back into the labeling, and that is with the products of the U.S. because we could add to that labeling the actual packaging of it so that we're not just taking foreign beef, bringing it in and repackaging and putting a USA label. So that might be an interim fix before we had the full-on cool labeling.
Okay. And Corey, you're up next.
Yes, I would. I think that we live in a world where we've got to know what we're eating, what we're drinking. If this coronavirus has taught us anything, it's that there's a lot of little things in this world that we can't see that can hurt you. And the United States has incredibly high quality standards of our food, of our water. And we need to be able to market that. People need to know what they're eating and what they're being exposed to. So on top of that, Montana leads the nation in so many, you know, from the Golden Triangle and our grains to the stock growers to the animals, everything. We've got the best of the best. And so by all means, I wish everybody in America could eat as well as we do here in Montana, but it's certainly a start.
Good. And we will go to Mark next. Mark?
Yes, there's a common theme here that we believe that all Americans should know where their food is coming from. But there's a backstory to this. And the reason it was lifted in 2015 was because of World Trade Organization ruling with $3.6 billion worth of tariffs that were going to be imposed. So the backstory of that, and the reason the Congress and the president both lifted that, was because it was going to result in an increase in food prices. And there is a possibility for a marketing opportunity as well here. Obviously, I support the labeling. I want to know where my food's coming from. But a voluntary cool program, it creates a niche market for our farmers and our ranchers that we can, they know, you can choose to buy your beef and know that it's actually been born, raised, and slaughtered in the United States. But if you're a family who perhaps does your grocery shopping at Walmart, that cost needs to be, it's part of the bigger discussion, and it's important we understand the backstory.
Thank you, Mark. And now we will go to John. Same question to you, John.
If this pandemic has taught us anything, we need to start being a self-sufficient country once again. We need to be able to stand alone with everything that we can. And our food should be, I mean, you look at needs, food, shelter, clothing have always, you know, we were always top number one. Food's number one. We absolutely need to start with made in the USA everything. And cool is, it kind of baffles me that we are even having to have this discussion, that we don't absolutely sit there and tell everyone made, grown, raised, sold everything here in the USA. We have to be proud of that, and we have to start helping our agriculture. We cannot start outsourcing our agriculture. We can't lose it.
And Joe, we'll have you first round question.
This is probably the most common asked question I get anymore as I campaign, first by travel in the state and then virtually. Absolutely, this is something that we can do. The beef industry already does it with certified Black Angus, already does it with BQA, beef quality assurance. This is something that can be done. You know, the biggest problem is that we have a concentration of packers. We only have three packers, really, three different owners. One of them is owned by a foreign competitor of Brazil, JBS. And so there's a lot of price fixing that's going on at the packer level, and they're pushing back on this. And this is something that, you know, the consumer needs to drive it. The producers need to drive it. And I think if anything has happened from this coronavirus over the last 6 weeks, is we're starting to see the need for smaller packing, more regional packing facilities. And so we're starting to see that grow. And this problem, I suspect this problem is going to be fixed within the next 18 months because of what happened in the corona and happened with this virus situation.
Okay, I want to do a kind of a clarified question here, and I'm just going to go back through the order. We'll start with you, Joe. Should product of the U.S. labeling be applied only to products that were born, raised, and processed in the USA? Joe?
Yeah, that's a question you asked during the gubernatorial debate, too, as well. And so there's a lot of cattle that come that are born in Texas, Arizona, New Mexico, go down in winter in Mexico, and then come back up at the feedlots in Yuma. And those cattle, of course, cannot be considered U.S. cattle. It's saying we have some cattle going back and forth between the Canadian border. You know, that's an excuse that the packers have used for years, that, you know, it's too hard to track the cattle. But at the end of the day, that we can track and we know we can do it. Again, we do it with certified Black Angus, BQA. So it can be done. The packers are pushing back, and it all goes back to this breaking up the packers. We have more concentration in packers than we did in the 1920s when we passed the Stockyard Packers Act. And so we're going to have to push back on them. And again, this is what's really one of the blessings that's coming out of, there's not very many blessings coming out of this coronavirus, but that's certainly on the agricultural side, we're seeing this breakup of the packers starting to happen.
John, I'd like you to answer that follow-up question. Again, should product of U.S. labeling be applied only to products that were born, raised, and processed in the USA?
Why can't we just show exactly where all of it's coming from? The way I'm seeing this, and I'm not trying to sit there and act like I'm some kind of a farmer. I'm not. I'm not going to disrespect farmers like Michael Bloomberg did. The USDA is creating monopolies, and we have to stop that. We need free market, and we need to start looking at our food in terms of, is it grown? Is it raised? Is it produced? Why can't we start letting the people that are growing our food hand it off to the people that are shelving our food that are going to buy it? Why do we have to have this middleman that is creating this monopoly? That has got to stop.
And Mark, I'll go to you next.
Yes, this is a really good discussion because it is timely and it matters to Montana. Fundamentally, my philosophy is I'm a free trade person, and this kind of smacks into that, and that's why I brought up the tariffs into that. If you give the American farmer and rancher a level playing, he will compete and he will profit, and that's the fact. And that's where I said the possibility of how we go about this, to respect those free trade agreements, is what kind of drove this, the lifting of that. Now, I told you I want to see labeling. I want to know where my food comes from. But there's the niche. We can respect that, but at the same time, Montana ranchers can sell their beef as born, raised, and slaughtered in the state of Montana. That's a marketing niche. There's a way to market this, and we have to look for opportunities sometimes beyond just what's obvious.
And Corey, it's your turn. Should products of U.S. labeling be applied only to products that was born, raised, and processed in the USA? Corey?
You know, like a lot of things in politics, and certainly with policy, there's more than just two answers. I think it's a false dichotomy to think this has to be done this way or that way. I actually think that consumers need, deserve, and are educated enough to have better and more information. So I think that we have the ability to track if an animal comes from the U.S., goes to Canada, goes to Mexico, goes to Vietnam and back. I'd like to see that. I think that the capability to document where things have gone, even if it's multiple stops, I don't think it's just either or, one or the other. I think that the consumers can deal with that. And I think that's good and rightful. And I think that creates a better marketplace for the future. We do it with all sorts of other products, not necessarily with food, but we do have the capability. So I would like actually full disclosure on all of the stops, not just this or that.
And Deborah, we'll ask you to answer the follow-up question, please.
Yes, and I addressed it a little bit, I guess, in the previous question. But yes, I do think that we can modify the labeling to include where it's raised, because I think, unfortunately, we're seeing less expensive beef coming in from Brazil and other countries, and then it gets mixed with our higher quality beef. And it is sort of preventing the consumer from knowing where it's coming from, and takes away an opportunity for our own ranchers to clearly identify that their meat is available.
Okay, let's go to the next question. We're going to talk about Farm Bill, and obviously it's a safety net for farmers and ranchers, very important. Corey, you'll answer the question first, and it goes like this. If you are elected to Congress, you will be writing the new Farm Bill. What key areas are you looking to improve? Corey?
You know, in my 8 years on the Agriculture Committee in the State Senate, and certainly watching this as a statewide leader, I think the most that we can expect the best outcomes from our congressmen and our congressional delegation is look at the big picture and advocate for our key industry. So agriculture, I think that what I would be looking for is systemic support. I'm incredibly disappointed in the tariff wars that have hurt our producers. I mean, the gains that we might make in a few months, it will take years to recreate some of the damages that have been done. So I look to supporting the small family farms. You know, I was the only candidate on a 4-to-1 decision. I was the only statewide official to vote against Angela Farms, which was the government buying out a working farm of 17,000 acres near Miles City. We've got a lot of work to do for the small farmers.
Okay, and let's get the answer from Mark. Mark, you're next.
Yes, thank you. I am one generation removed from the family ranch myself. I was 6 years old, we moved to Dillon, but I had a butcher knife in my hand. by the time I was 10 years old in my dad's meat business growing up. And that's part of the ag industry. So we're talking about, and so the word I'm getting at with this is, yes, the large packing operations and these distribution systems have been consolidated. And that's been somewhat beneficial to consumers because it creates efficiency and lowers food prices. And that's important. But what it has done is has put our farmers at risk because, as Joe talked about earlier, there's limited opportunities who the producer sells his product to. And that's important that we protect the family farm and the our heritage, because it's Montana heritage. It's more than just our economics. It's our heritage. But I care about free markets, and our farmers and ranchers need markets that are fair and a level playing field because they can compete and they can profit.
All right, and let's switch over to John now. What key areas are you looking to improve, John?
If we're on a federal level looking to pass bills, our congressperson needs to be looking at this in terms of how are we a support system for our state. We need to start. We need to work with our governor. We need to work with our state senators, our state representatives. And we need to be looking at, on a federal level, passing a bill for what's best for the state. We need to start taking practices more towards the 10th Amendment and start giving more power back to the state. People in the state of Montana know what's best for Montana. Agriculture in Montana knows what's best for Montana, not people on the East Coast, not these big cities. And being the lone representative, whoever that is going to be, they need to be fighting for the state of Montana. And I see federally, we need to start being more of a support system for the state.
Okay, and we'll go to Joe. Joe, you're next.
Thanks. You know, the farm bill would have to be drafted in 4 years. The last two farm bills have been just automatic renewals in terms of the farm risk side of things. My problem, that was when I was on the state FSA committee, I saw this. There are haves and have-nots with the farm programs. There are no risk protections, very little risk protections for the cattle side of it, a lot of risk protections for the grain side. And so I want to see a farm bill that allows, that equalizes out those risks that we have in the business. But most importantly, the biggest thing I want to bring in the next farm bill is back to the funding of grazing associations that USDA used to do back in the 60s and 70s. This will allow us a mechanism to start competing against APR, and ranchers can get together, the American Prairie Reserve. Ranchers can start getting together and compete against the APR and buy those lands and turn them into grazing districts. So I'm going to look forward to trying to add that in. The next farm bill will be up in 4 years.
Thank you. We will go to the third question. Oh, I'm sorry. We got Deborah. I'm sorry, Deborah. Yes, please.
Thank you. Yes, I would say that in my discussions across the state, the biggest area of need is to helping our small producers, our small cattle producers, because they are left out in the cold. And I'm sure we're going to be talking about the monopoly that exists with the meat packers and how that is negatively impacting the viability of some of these ranches. So that is one area that I'd like to see strengthened.
Okay. Now we can go to the third question. Okay. This question will go to Mark. We'll start with you, Mark. And it's fairly lengthy, so I'll try to read it best I can here. Because the trade was depressed, all agricultural commodity prices, the USDA created the Market Facilitation Program, or the MFP. Traditional caps to the amount paid were removed. So ultimately, most of this money went to large corporations, not family farms. For instance, the JBS, a Brazilian-owned packer, received over $100 million, while many Montana families, farm families, only received a few hundred dollars, and ranchers received basically nothing. Question would be, what would you do to make sure that small businesses, family farms, and ranches receive needed support while preventing multinational corporations from raiding our treasury? Mark, you get that one.
This is a great question because it illustrates the swamp. And even in the current circumstances with COVID, because of the farmers and ranchers, not just in Montana, but nationwide, they're plowing produce back into the ground, and eggs and chickens are being destroyed and all that. There's an investment that's been made into that. And that's kind of what the COVID relief bill was all about. But even that is a good example of the banks and the corporations and the large packing opportunity. They are the ones that always receive the funding. And that is what a congressman has to do for his constituents here in Montana, is exactly what you're getting at. You have to bring that relief back to where it belongs. You have to bring that relief back to the small farm and ranch, because the family farms are at risk. They will be destroyed by this if we don't fight for them. So I think that's – I hope I got to the answer that you were looking at.
And John, we'll turn it over to you.
To me?
Yes.
Okay. We have to find creative ways to start getting money into Montana. We have to be, our state is the fourth largest state in the union, but we're what, 44th in population. And we've got so many vast differences that's going on around here. We maybe have to get creative. We maybe have to start looking, can we get funding for some type of water things that are going on? Can we give tax incentives to these farms, businesses that are locally owned, locally operated, that everything around here start giving a little bit more leniency towards if they're going to actually start working directly with some of these small packers? We have got to get creative on a federal level, because quite honestly, we're just, if we don't do it, we're just going to get hidden away. I mean, that's the sad fact of the matter is Montana gets looked upon as this private fishing resort. We just don't seem to count. And so we've got to be fun and creative in our ways to get money to Montana.
And Joe, you're up next.
So every farm program that we have has caps on it, $125,000, and it has provisions that foreign-owned companies can't receive the payments. Why that was removed is definitely the definition of what's wrong with Washington, D.C. and the swamp on this program. It was a good program in terms of helping the farmers in Iowa and Ohio and Tennessee, where you grow corn and soybeans. Not so much for Montana. Montanans that had irrigated grain got $16 an acre. It wasn't enough to offset the kind of impact that was there. We need to keep those programs, the cost limits in there that says $125,000 max, and no foreign owned companies can receive those payments. And that's something we've had for years in the Farm Bill. And why that was removed on this one needs to be really looked into. And we just can't have situations where that's there again. But the bottom line is that we need a program that helps the cattle folks, because they're suffering most in this crisis that we're having right now.
And we will give you a chance, Deborah, to answer that question.
Thank you. You know, I think, again, it comes back to our small ranchers being and farmers being harmed. And I believe that there were good intentions about some of the money that was put out. But we find as it unfortunately has gone to some of the largest corporations and not to the actual rancher that needs it. And I believe that any new programs need to seriously look at more local opportunities in Montana, taking away the regulations that prevent us from doing more farm to table, for instance, and giving other opportunities to our local farms and ranches.
Okay. And Corey, if you would, please.
You know, we just simply need more people in Congress who will advocate for our states' rights. It's as simple as that. The group of states that have agriculture, if not all of them, but certainly the agricultural states, if they will have senators and congressmen who will insist that when we start going into these arenas, that we're not going to be an authoritarian country, that we're not going to commoditize away the quality of life of the people who have built this country for centuries now, and that our congressmen and senators will work with governors in the legislature to best figure out from the bottom up, not the top down. This is really solvable. It's easy. We do that with education policy all the time. We let the states decide things. We do it, whether it's through block grants, we do it in a variety of ways. So the Farm Bill, all sorts of federal legislation can be less authoritarian if the 435 members of Congress and the 100 senators will stand by their states and say, no, we're going to have our states make decisions on this.
I want to talk a little bit about climate change, global warming, and this question goes to you, John. We'll start with you. How can agriculture and the government work together to address climate change? John?
I'm obviously, this one's a little bit personal to me. I just spent the last 8 years in the oil and gas industry, and I think we all know that climate change and the oil and gas industry, we're not really friendly with one another. I'm looking more towards, I do not have a problem with research and development. In this time right now, we still need, I believe energy is an absolute necessity and a need. We need to keep looking at it in terms of what's the most efficient, what's the most cost effective. Healthy extraction is a very real thing. And so where I have a problem with how they keep saying the science is there and how we're destroying our climate. We've gone up 2 degrees, I think, in the last 40 years. I mean, there's an awful lot of science that says it isn't there, too. And I'm genuinely scared that this climate phenomenon that they're doing is killing good paying jobs for Montanans. So I'm more towards, I'd like to start seeing us looking at more things towards maybe R&D towards water, maybe hemp, if that's something.
Time, we want John, to Tom, time. Thank you. Same question to you, Joe.
That's a great question, Sarge. And I think there, one of the things that comes from this pandemic is that we have learned that the large amount of CO2 on the planet isn't coming from coal-fired plants. It's coming from the large movement of humans from point A to point B and from point B to point A every day. You know, you can see the Himalayas for the first time in 35 years. NASA's showing all these charts where the CO2 levels are down. But your question is, how can Congress deal with this? And there's several different ways. One, Congress can incentivize more work-at-home type environments. You know, right now our tax code really tries to incentivize to get up, go to work, go to an office building, and come back. But the other one that's really most important, Montana has two of the most unallotted water in the lower 48, both in Canyon Ferry and at Tiber Dam. If we were to build those two irrigation projects like they were supposed to be built, that would be somewhere around 250,000 acres of irrigated that we can bring back in. And all we and is corn, irrigated corn, irrigated alfalfa are one of the biggest CO2 sequesters that we have in America. And so, you know, Montana could do a big part in helping sequester CO2 if we develop those two irrigation projects. Dams are already built. We just haven't been able to put the irrigation projects together.
Thank you. And Deborah, here's the question. How can agriculture and the government work together to address climate change? Deborah?
Well, I believe that our producers are very wise and very educated on ways that they can participate. But I would encourage a free market option on that and not necessarily look for subsidies for any one particular type of fuel. I think that we need to be careful when we're producing energy. I think we are very conscientious about our environment here in Montana. And therefore, if we leave it up to the producers and to the people that have ideas for alternative sources, that we will come up with great solutions.
Okay, thank you. And let's turn it over to Corey.
As far as agriculture and the government, I don't know that agriculture has a lot to do with this. I do think that we continue to improve. We continue to utilize science. Things get better. If there is a single reason why I think the House Democrats deserve to lose control of the U.S. Congress, it's them pushing the Green New Deal, which would absolutely bankrupt and destroy our country almost instantly financially with impossible expectations. And so I think, as in all things, balance is what matters. And so we continue to innovate. The agricultural committee community has part of that, but I do think it falls more into the natural resource industry. And quite frankly, as a lot of people realize, the climate of the world goes from hot to cold over the centuries, over the millennia. How much of that is man-made, how much is not, doesn't really matter to the extent that we continue to find innovations and make things less impactful on the environment. But I don't think agriculture bears that responsibility.
Okay. And we'll ask Mark to answer this question. Mark?
A good question. It's a hot topic always when you talk about climate change. Everybody wants clean water. Everybody wants clean air. We all care about a clean environment. Deborah mentioned, I'm a free market person. I believe in private industry and private solutions. It's more efficient than government. Government can influence this with tax incentives for government. We can push things in certain directions. And that's kind of the role that government plays. But private industry is still the best way to solve these problems. There was an old bumper sticker back in the day, I remember, and he used to say, the farmer and rancher, the original environmentalist. And it was a great point because it is the farmer and rancher who he is economic livelihood comes from the environment. He takes care of it. And by the way, we know the issues in Montana better than somebody in Washington. Local control, private answers are always the best. So
thank you. You are listening to the congressional debate here with our candidates. And we once again want to say thank you to our great sponsors that allow us to get the insight to each of our candidates. Thank you to the USCA, MCA, Northern Plains, and MFU, Montana Farmers Union. As we go to the next question, we have made it through the Joe now. Joe, you'll get this first question. And again, it's a lengthy one. So here we go. The Holcomb fire and coronavirus have put a spotlight on our food supply system. It's broken. Since the beginning of the crisis, multinational packers have been charging 20% more for meat to consumers and paying 30% less to producers. In the eyes of the Montana Farmers Union, this is price gouging. What action would you take to promote a competitive and fair marketplace? Joe?
So 2 weeks ago when I led the tractors to the Capitol, this was the point I was making. And when Phil Drake from the Great Falls Tribune interviewed me, I said, we start to run out of food, it'll make this pandemic look like child's play. And so, you know, I've been saying this for 2 weeks. And, you know, the concentration of packers is higher than it was in the 1920s when we passed the Stockyard Packers Act. And so we need to break up the monopoly. I support what President Trump's doing with the Department of Justice looking into this. But the bottom line is that we need to have more packers, reasonable packers, that can supply our food chain. We have learned from this coronavirus that that this globalization type effort puts us at too much risk. And so we're already starting to see it, this globalization, or this regional packers starting to be built. And so that's the answer to this, the situation. But obviously, price gouging, Department of Justice is the only way to go right now at this point.
And Deborah, it's your turn.
Yes, I think that we are looking at a monopoly situation that absolutely needs investigation. And especially, you know, if you take a look at the SEC reports, somebody's telling a lie somewhere, because it looks like the Packers' margins are pretty slim. So an investigation is absolutely warranted. I do believe that the move to regional packers and loosening the rules under the USDA to allow more movement of meat within Montana and potentially across state lines would be very helpful and still would keep our food supply safe.
And let's turn it over to Corey.
You know, I think the role of Congress is to set good long-term policy. Yes, we should hold people accountable for the short-term reactions. A lot of us are going to be armchair quarterbacks about what the governor's done, what the president's done, what the businesses that have gouged have done, the profiteers, the procrastinators, the scammers that take advantage of people who are vulnerable during times of crises, whether it's a pandemic or a war. But in terms of reacting to the price gouging, I think what's more important is that we keep the big picture. And that's why it's so important we elect a congressman who knows how the world works. You know, I hold statewide office. I've held office for years. I've served our country. These aren't easy solutions. I think we need to set good long-term policy. The madness that surrounds short-term fixes just causes more problems. We ought to have a policy in the United States which gives generational, centuries worth of stability to our producers, both in the stock growers, the ag, and that goes for all industries, and get away from the short-term fixes, especially after a pandemic.
And Mark, same question. What action would you take to promote a competitive and fair marketplace?
This is another example of kind of the background that you did of the swamp and some of the bureaucracy. And all of us on this interview today are kind of on the same boat. But I want to illustrate that American agriculture is a strategic priority. We've learned that with this COVID, where we're dependent on a foreign nation for our pharmaceuticals. We know what it's like to be dependent on foreign nations for our energy and oil supplies. We can never do that. We must take care of American agriculture because we have to be able to feed ourselves. And no nation should ever have that power over us. It's a strategic issue, agriculture. I have the leadership background where I've worked through difficult problems with people on different sides, and I bring them together to find a common solution. It's an important issue because it is a strategic national security issue, American agriculture.
And John, your answer, please.
Yeah, on a federal level, we have got to break up this monopoly that the USDA has created. And how can we honestly sit there and say that Montana and, let's say, Maryland know the difference between what's best and what isn't best for farming in them states? We've got to get power back to the states. And we have got to, like all of my opponents have said, we've got to bring more free market open so you don't have monopolies dictating both supply and demand. It really is, you know, and some whoever the congressperson is from Montana needs to be heading up that charge to create that bill.
Thank you. All right, let's go to the next question. We've heard a lot about COVID-19, so we are going to ask about that. The COVID-19 pandemic has highlighted the importance for internet. People are working and studying from home. We're doing debates from home, obviously. Telemedicine, marketing services, government portals, the jobs, educational opportunity, and more rely on the internet. Many in rural Montana lack broadband access. So the first question, or this question, goes to Deb. Deborah, what will you do to ensure that all Montanans have access to broadband and cell services? Deborah?
Well, this one impacts me directly since we don't have broadband here, which was a little bit of my concern about being on today. But I would encourage companies, you know, it's extremely expensive for the infrastructure, and that's the main problem. But I think that there are things that we can do without picking winners and losers, but to offer tax relief for companies that are willing to invest and give them some abatement and relief from that to encourage them to come in and get us set up, because it will impact our economy positively in the long run in so many ways, in so many areas, whether it is assisting ranchers out in the hinterland or people that just want to do business, or people like healthcare workers that want to come in and live in a nice, quiet rural community. And that would actually boost the economy. So I think what we can do as much of a free market opportunity, but giving some tax abatement would be the approach I would take.
Okay. And Corey, it's your turn.
You know, I would support designating broadband access or as critical infrastructure. As Secretary of State, all 50 secretaries of state opposed what President Obama did, and President Trump continued when they designated that our elections are critical infrastructure, and thereby started a whole series of events under the Department of Homeland Security. If we can say that our elections are critical infrastructure, we can certainly say that our ability to get on the internet from anywhere in our 50 states is a critical function also. So I would be open to looking at designating access to high-speed internet as critical infrastructure.
Okay, and let's turn it over to Mark. Mark?
Yes, the COVID circumstances have driven home a really sore point that not all of Montana has internet access. And Deborah was talking about just not being able to log in. That's reality. But this isn't just affecting agriculture, it's affecting education. And critical infrastructure, which Corey was just alluding to, is really important. Now, the reason private industry is not going to provide that is it's not cost effective to take this to provide that infrastructure into these rural communities. There's not a customer base. The role of the federal government sometime is to provide that. And there's examples. The Rural Electrification Administration, the Interstate Highway System. Sometimes the federal government has to come in and provide the infrastructure. Then private industry will bid and compete. And that could actually be self-sustaining where it's cost effective. But I think the federal government is going to have to take the role to provide that kind of infrastructure to our rural communities. That's just kind of the way it's going to be.
Okay. And let's turn it over to you, John.
The automation revolution is coming. It doesn't matter who's going to be in charge. We are going to start building and creating machines that are going to start doing the work. And this state has a real opportunity, not just in agriculture, but in industrial, also in our tourism. And when we can start marketing this state as such, you're going to start seeing these communication companies, these telecom companies that are going, they're going to start bringing broadband into the state of Montana. This will be something that we can work pretty easily with these companies to start building these transmission lines. We did it in the electrical utility. We'll do it again in broadband.
Okay. And Joe, if you would please.
Yeah, sorry, just a great question. And I think of my dad telling me stories about when they finally got power out at the ranch in the Big Hole, where you could stop using candles on the Christmas trees and go to lights, and how it changed their entire ranch operation. And so I support the REA model that we allow government to do that REA model that makes it work. You know, if you look at REA's paid back into the treasury twice what we paid out, it's a good investment for the federal government. And it allows the ability for REAs to have another leg to their stool. And so I think this is something that's absolutely got to happen. I'm like Deborah. I'm on a Wi-Fi satellite feed. I don't have internet out here, barely have cell phone service, and I'm only 12 miles from the Capitol. So, you know, this is something that has to happen. I supported Burns's deal where he had E911, where we reversed 911 for cell phones to find people when they get lost. This is one of the most important things we do. These are becoming national priorities to us. And so I just support those kind of measures, and I will always support them if I'm the congressman.
All right, let's go on to the next question. You knew it was coming, healthcare. This will be to Corey. Corey, you get to answer it first. It is access to affordable and reliable healthcare is critically important to all Montanans. Years of low commodity prices have contributed to increasing stress on Montana farmers. Without health insurance, they are but one health event away from bankruptcy. Suicide is on the rise in rural Montana. Corey, should the Affordable Care Act be strengthened? More broadly, how will you ensure affordable, reliable health care for all Montanans? Corey?
Well, there's a whole lot in that question when you throw in health care and suicide and Obamacare, but in a 1 minute, I'll give it a shot. You know, we all, five Congresses have come and gone since Obamacare was passed. It is the law of the land. So the trick is to make it better. How do we make it better? I think there's universal agreement that people need quality health care that can cover pre-existing conditions. I think we need a better full cost accounting on it. I do think all people that work hard should have coverage, should have access to great care. I also think that the 11 million illegal immigrants in the country, there should be an agreement between the United States and their country, primarily Mexico, as to how to pay for that. And that should be segmented off of the Affordable Care Act and treated differently. But I think there are a lot of things that we can do to bolster what is already a good system and make it better and make it available and cheaper to younger Americans.
And Mark, you're next.
Healthcare is a bipartisan issue. We all need healthcare. Everybody needs healthcare, and that's a reality. And Corey said it, and I happen to agree that Obamacare is here and it's probably what we're going to have to work with. But we have to work to improve it. The reason Obamacare has struggled is because it was passed, became into law without a single Republican vote. There's no bipartisan support. The reason the repeal efforts have struggled is because nobody has offered a credible bipartisan solution. But healthcare matters to all of us. Going back to my, I guess my philosophy is I believe in private solutions and competitive private solutions to problems. And we can work with that as a framework, but we have to improve it. People need health care. That is a place to start. That's the common ground. And we need to bring both sides together, frankly, to solve a very important problem, because rural Montana has very serious limitations to health care access.
Thank you. Now let's go to John. John, if you would.
Healthcare system's broke. I mean, we're talking about the egg, the problems that we're dealing with egg. Our healthcare system in this country is broken. People that don't make any money, they get free healthcare, but we want people working, and then they can't afford it. I'm currently working with a group called Madison's Mission, and we're trying to get supplies for type 1 diabetics. How come in 1996 insulin cost $20 a vial, and now it's $700 a vial? Again, it's the FDA is coming up with ways of creating monopolies, and they're price gouging everybody. And then you've got insurance companies that they're skyrocketing malpractice insurance on doctors. And so what ends up happening there, the end game comes back to the client, to the patient. We have got to figure out a way to where we have got to stop these monopolies that are being created in Washington, D.C. It really is that simple.
And Joe, you're up next.
So this is probably the biggest issue facing our country today. And with 20% of the economy wrapped up in healthcare, but it's the only thing that we ever do as Americans that has no free market principles to it. We have no ability to negotiate what our prices are. We have no ability to know what the prices are going in. I've been advocating for the longest time. I just don't get it. Maybe I'm just too much of a simple guy to understand why I cannot buy health insurance in Florida. It just bothers me to no end that we have not been able to fix this. I think you hit it right on with the suicides. I really support what the Farm Bureau did for the last 18 months, bringing this to attention. I've also had friends who've committed suicide because of the farm crisis. Our healthcare issue is the biggest thing facing our Congress today. And if we don't get this fixed, it's going to make it even worse. So I support free market principles. I support funding small hospitals that are in our little area, little towns that we have. And I support price transparency that the Trump administration's brought forward. That's absolutely what we need to negotiate.
Time. Thank you. And Deborah, same question to you, if you would, please.
Thank you. I agree with Corey. That's a lot for 1 minute. But I would disagree that it's working fine. It definitely is broken. We have disrupted the doctor-patient relationship, and we are pricing out a lot of people from being able to afford insurance because we don't have the transparency. I do think the president's executive order was a good first step, because a lot of hospitals that I've spoken with and their boards, they don't have any idea what their costs are, because everything is built on an insurance reimbursement model. So until we get a handle on that, there's no way to start really reducing the cost of healthcare. So that's going to have to be tackled. It's huge. But I think we've begun that process. And then I think all that we can do to free up doctors and other healthcare professionals to actually do the jobs they were trained for without so many regulations, threat of lawsuits, and being forced to follow a certain protocol, whether it's the right thing for that patient or not, that increases our costs. And then that's taking insurance away or the ability for other people to get healthcare. So those are a few things that I would work on.
Thank you. Yeah, and it is a loaded question, and we all know we're going to have to deal with that time and time again. So let's go to the next question. We will start with Mark this time. And the question is, the CSKT Water Compact was ratified in Montana legislative session in 2015. However, it must be ratified by Congress in order to be finalized. Do you support the compact? And if so, what would you do in Congress to see it ratified? Mark?
Great question, hot topic, and I knew it was coming. Yes, to answer your question simply, I do support the approval of the Water Compact. And the reason is both Senator Tester, Senator Daines, the governor, and the attorney general. So bipartisan support for it. There's been a lot of work that has gone into it. But the reason that is there, if we don't pass this, there are a lot of pending legal lawsuits, tribal rights, and that's going to cost $23 billion just sitting there waiting. And it's going to open the floodgates on downstream court battles over water rights. It's the right thing to do. I know it's a hot topic, but fundamentally, I do support the approval of the Water Compact.
Okay, and let's go to John. Same question.
Well, this is something I've been trying to read up on for the last 3 days, trying to get information on it. And I would say right now I'm leaning towards no, I do not support it. I seen something back in 1966, I believe it was, where the Aboriginal agreement was $4.5 million was paid. My biggest concern to all of this is what kind of precedence is this going to set? I mean, water rights should be held by the state. And if we give the tribes, if we give tribal the right to own the water rights, are we going to set a precedence for all landowners? So what are we going to do in terms of the people that are in Montana? What kind of rights are they going to have to these waters? So I don't want to say yes or no, because I need to obviously research this further. It's a huge compact, but I'd have to say right now, no, I'm opposed to it.
Okay. And let's go to Joe with the answer. Joe.
Well, sorry, just kind of a loaded question, because there's really kind of two compacts out there. There's the one that passed the 2015 Congress or Montana legislature, and then there's the one that Steve Daines brought forward. This is the last Indian compact that we have to settle in Montana. We've settled the other six. This one's got a whole bunch of carrots that we have to that make it different than all the other water compacts. I support a negotiated settlement that protects the irrigation district, has a governance board of the irrigation district, and ultimately protects the bull trout. I don't believe Senator Daines' bill does that. If I'm your congressman and this hasn't been passed, I'm going to want to see protection for the irrigation district where it's governed like the irrigation district I'm on. And secondly, I want to see protections for the bull trout, because this is all about the endangered species. And if we're not protecting the bull trout, endangered species will come in and we'll have the federal government dictating in-stream flows versus this compact. So I 100% support a negotiated settlement, but I'm having trouble with Senator Daines' bill because of the land transfer component of it. And also the price tag. The price tag tripled.
I'm Joe.
Past the Montana Congress, Montana Legislature.
And let's go to Deborah with her answer. Deborah?
Well, honesty, I did vote against the compact during the legislative session, and I didn't think that our farmers and ranchers were adequately protected. So I appreciate the hard work that's been done by our Senate delegation, and I think they have fixed a number of the concerns that I had and would give some finality to water rights, but there are still a few concerns. I think there's still a little bit of room for improvement. Even if this version were to pass, there's the opportunity for the House to come back with a companion bill, and maybe we can fix some more of those things. But I think for certainty and for preserving our water rights, we are going to need some sort of a negotiated settlement, because the compact that we had from the 2015 session didn't do that.
Okay. And Corey, if you would, please.
No, I don't support CSKT compact.
Okay. Once again, we do want to say thank you to our sponsors, allow us to have these conversations and this debate here for this evening. Thank you to MCA, Northern Plains, USCA, and of course, the Montana Farmers Union for this conversation. And let's go to the next question. This will go to you, John. And the question is, after the Japan bilateral agreement, USMCA and China faced one deal When deals were signed, the already low agricultural commodity markets went down or stayed the same. Now, within weeks of signing the phase one deal, China bought 1 million tons of wheat from Australia, Canada, and France, and not one bushel from the United States. We are selling less to those countries now than we did before. Question is, what are your plans to help get our markets back on track? John?
We first of all have to I have a tendency to start looking at farming similar to infrastructure, and we have to ensure that we do not allow ourselves to lose our food. We have to make sure that that happens. If I'm being 100% honest, I've always been very much in favor of the tariff wars. And I believe that long term, it's going to have a positive impact on all businesses in this country. And farmers are in a tough spot right now. And this is why you see bailouts. But what's going on with these bailouts that take place? I mean, we have to be able to work hand in hand with the things that are necessary right now. I mean, procurement is going to happen after we've kind of really destroyed the country in a lot of ways with COVID-19. So it's for right now, I think it's really important that this goes back to cool. It goes back to we need to make sure that we're taking care of our agriculture.
Okay, and let's turn it over to you, Joe. Same question.
So when those two deals were negotiated with China and Japan, there was a lot of optimism in agriculture. And we saw fat cattle go to 120. We saw corn rise, we saw soybean rise, and then COVID came in, and we saw all these things tank. I supported Trump's tariff war because we need to have free and access market. I know because I'm one of them. Montana and American ranchers and farmers can compete on the world stage against anybody. We grow a superior product. We do it the most environmentally friendly way. We can win if we compete one-on-one. I supported equalizing the tariffs off, and that was really important. One of the biggest troubles we have, and Trump is sometimes a victim of his own success, is our strong U.S. dollar has made our product 30 and 40% pricier than any of our other competitors. And so we have to have these tariffs being equalized out so that we don't have a tariff on top of a 70-cent exchange rate. So what I would do to support these is more open markets, more free trade agreements that allow our products to move without tariffs and restriction access to markets. We grow about 40% of the world's grain, and we're about 5% of the population.
Let's go to Deborah. Deborah, same question.
Thank you. Well, of all the farmers and ranchers I've spoken with, they agree that the USMCA was definitely a step above NAFTA and that we are seeing freer and fairer trade. Our trade balance with China has been out of balance for so long. This really doesn't surprise me. I think the president in the end will have some very good progress in that regard. But at least with the USMCA, we have opened up markets and we do have a better trade situation, as well as fixing some of the wheat problems that we had with Canada. Although with some of the regulations that are occurring, we still have to fix some of the wheat issues and the transfer back and forth with Canada.
Thank you. And let's go to Corey. Corey?
You know, there's a battle in the Republican Party. Historically, the Republican Party has been the party that advocates for free trade. And we have a battle now between more of a protectionist policy versus a free trade policy. And I have always I've understood that there's pluses and minuses to both, but I think free trade is the better way to go. I think the world is connected in ways that it never has been. The population's at an all-time high. And there's a very good chance that for the first time in a century that we could be going into a depression, maybe a global depression. And I certainly hope that we do not. But we need to elect congressmen who have their eyes wide open, who are smart, who are willing to look at facts, and who are willing to study the lessons of history. This is serious stuff. The consequences of destroying farming and ranching and devastating entire industries is significant, and we need to be accountable as policymakers. You know, I support free trade, and I think we need to get back to where our producers can get their products to market, and it's a critical issue facing our country.
And let's go to Mark. Mark, if you would.
Yes, trade agreements, they need to have an enforcement mechanism always, because if we provide a level playing field, our farmers and ranchers, they can compete and they will profit. I support open markets and free trade. Because we, as Americans, we're just competitive. And you give us a free and fair trade agreement, we will compete every time. But it has to have an enforcement mechanism as part of that every time. Ronald Reagan used to say, you know, about nuclear weapons, trust but verify. It's true with cows and wheat as well. You have to trust but verify.
Thank you. And thank you all for the answers to those questions. And you're right, they did have some very loaded questions in there. We want to give you a chance for your closing remarks now, if you would. We'll give you 90 seconds for each of you, and we will start with Joe for your closing remarks. Joe?
Sarge, I want to thank you. I want to thank the Farmers Union, Walt Schweitzer, and the U.S. Cattlemen for putting this together. This is great. This is going to be the only one from the sounds of it. And, you know, we're pretty happy where we are in our campaign. We're endorsed by the National Public Lands Council because they see us as the most agricultural friendly candidate running for Congress. You know, it's really important to remember that since 1988, where Republicans have only advanced candidates out of the primary, out of competitive primaries that have won the general election twice. And so this election is about advancing the person forward that can move forward and win in the general. I have over 400 Montana donors, more than the rest of my competitors combined. A lot of Montanans have invested in my campaign because they believe that we are the right one to go forward. Our forefathers wanted this kind of approach. Somebody step out of their everyday business, go into the people's house, govern for a period of time, and go back home. And that's what I plan on doing. I vowed that I don't want to be the governor. I don't want to be the senator. I'm going to be a congressman and only the congressman. This turning this House seat over time after time after time is making no sense whatsoever. So I appreciate the time, appreciate the discussion, and I appreciate my opponents that can make it. And of course, like everybody else, I'm disappointed that not everybody attended.
Thank you. And closing comments from you, John.
Yeah, to reiterate what Joe just said, thank you very much for the opportunity to speak to everybody here. And my opponents, thank you for coming. I think this is absolutely essential that we needed to talk to one another. We can give an hour of our time to talk about agriculture. For me, I'm not a farmer. I'm an electrician. I'm a proud, born and raised Butte, Montana, union-trained oil field electrician. And I want to bring to this party labor. I want to show people that because of climate change, because of the Green New Deal, you're starting to see labor being gotten rid of in coal and in oil and gas. And when we do have this manufacturing boom coming along, skilled labor has a real opportunity to provide knowledge and money to the people that are going to start investing in these manufacturing plants that are going to start coming, because that kind of knowledge, at the end of the day, manufacturing means we're going to have parts and pieces doing the work. These parts and pieces have a shelf life. Quality skilled craft will save millions and millions of dollars. I saw it when I worked for the largest land drilling company in the world over in the Bakken. It's something that can happen. And I believe there's a real opportunity, not only for the GOP, but for skilled labor to bring that partnership together. And that is why I'm running.
Thank you, John. And Mark, if you would, please.
Yes, thank you to Farm Bureau for hosting this event. Thank you to my opponents who are participating. And thank you to all the viewers who are watching. This is an important election. I've started out, I didn't go over a lot of my bio. I said that I'm the best qualified and that my resume supports that. Okay, I grew up in Montana. I'm a Montana kid. I grew up in the ag community. I attended Montana schools, went to college in Montana, served in the military. I've done a lot of other things than just work in agriculture. And frankly, when I say I'm the true Montana representative, it's because, and I appreciate Farm Bureau hosting this because it's our number one economic driver, and it's all inclusive. From the farm through all the processes and then ends up in the dinner table. And all of that, the aspect of that is enormous. But the congressman has to represent the entire state. And I think I'm best qualified to do that. As a retired lieutenant colonel with 30 years of military service, I understand the strategic implications. And I was talking about agriculture as a strategic priority. But there are a lot of other qualities that I bring. I understand education. I worked actually as a suicide prevention program manager for the National Guard. I've worked in these issues. I really appreciate your time and your consideration, and I would love to go to work for you in Washington. Thank you.
Thank you, Mark. And let's go to Corey. Corey, your closing statement.
Good evening, and thank you, everyone. I'm grateful to have been served as your Secretary of State. I won my last race by 72,000 votes. In 20 years, I've never lost to a Democrat. So the Republican Party needs to decide, do we want to hold this congressional seat or not? Clearly, that's important to the conservatives, to the independents, to the people who are traditionally Republican. We need you to come out and vote. We need you to partake in this election that I'm actually overseeing as your Secretary of State. We're going to try to make sure there's good turnout. But as such, as a former military officer, a graduate of the U.S. Naval Academy, I understand international affairs and national security and military. As a businessman and a financial advisor, I understand budgets and markets. As a state senator who served on agriculture and energy commitment and committees, I understand the prime industries that Montana has as our number one issues. I've advocated that Montana have our own medical school when I was a state legislator. I understand healthcare. Quite simply, if you want a congressman who understands all of the issues that are important to Montana and who can and will win in November, I need your support now and hope to get your support to be our next congressman. Thank you.
Thank you, Corey. And Deborah, if you would, please.
Thank you so much. And it's been a pleasure being with everyone tonight. You know, agriculture still remains critical to our state national security, and we need to work together to find 21st century solutions, because we are at risk of losing family farms and ranches, and that is a legacy issue that we have to work hard to protect. But as we've heard today, and as you've seen, not only is agriculture a part of this, but our healthcare, our education, mental health issues, businesses, technology, the broadband. And we need to have someone with a broad background of experiences like I do and like you've heard from these others. So we're very fortunate in our party that we have a lot of people with a lot of good experience. But I think I bring a background that's a little bit different. And I have served in the private sector as well as public. And I served in the state legislature. But I also have a background in law and in small business and working in large corporations. I am a problem solver. And I evaluate all sides of an issue. You cannot, you look for common ground on an issue. We've heard areas, I think, where we'll probably be in agreement with the people on the other side. But we need to evaluate all the opportunities of an issue and find solutions that will work for Montana. I'm that person. I would be honored to serve you in Congress to represent Montana and America. Thank you.
What a great debate. Nice job by all of you. And I love the fact that we cover so many topics from healthcare to what is very important to agriculture throughout the state of Montana. So tremendous job on your part. And we gave you a little extra time for the closing because of your answers that we had throughout today. We know that the election is coming. We will have a new congressman, it sounds like, and or woman that we will have that will be representing us here in the great state of Montana. And of course, it'll be fun. The fact that we have a mail out ballot that's coming your way, June 2nd is the election, and then we'll get our Republican and Democrats on the ballot. And as you mentioned, we will have our main election that is coming up at that time. So thank you all so very much. Make sure everybody gets out and vote. It is very important that we take care of that. We go out and get our representation, because this election is second to none coming our way. There are so many topics we're dealing with, and COVID-19 is just one of the main topics that we have to deal with right now. Hey, we love the fact that we have sponsors that help us keep you informed here. Thank you so much to the USCA, the MCA, Northern Plains, and of course, thank you so much to the Montana Farmers Union with President Schweitzer there now, simply due to the fact that he'd asked me to be a part of it. Guys, thank you. Get out and vote, and thank you for being a part of this election in the great state of Montana.
Montana is home to 4 operating oil
You are tuned to KGVM Bozeman. We are Gallatin Valley Community Radio. On your radio dial at 95.9 FM and online at kgvm.org.
KGVM is thankful for Country Bookshelf, Bozeman's locally owned independent bookstore since 1957. Order for shipping or delivery online at countrybookshelf.com or email them at staff, STAFF, at countrybookshelf.com.
There are everyday actions to help prevent the spread of respiratory diseases. Wash your hands. Avoid close contact with people who are sick. Avoid touching your eyes, nose, and mouth. Stay home when you are sick. Cover your cough or sneeze. Clean and disinfect frequently touched objects with household cleaning spray. For more information, visit cdc.gov/COVID-19. This message brought to you by the National Association of Broadcasters and this station.
This
This is Joy LeClaire inviting you to listen to Harmonix, a show exploring music from the 12th to 21st centuries. Broadcast each Sunday morning from 7 to 9 here on KGVM, Gallatin Valley Community Radio. That's Harmonix, Sunday mornings from 7 to 9.
Good evening. Thank you for joining us here this evening. Earlier this week, we did work with our candidates to decide who would go first, and we're going to turn it over to Kathleen Williams for her opening comment. Kathleen?
Thank you so much. Thank you to all who made this forum possible, and to you at home and my friends on the Northern Ag Network. I will be the champion in Congress that Montana's agricultural sector needs and deserves, even though I never raised a 4-H steer. I've spent much of my career across Montana and the West working to protect water rights, diversify incomes, address predator issues, and bring young people back to the land. In 3 terms in the legislature, I worked with people of all political stripes to advance local food and expand markets for Montana's products. And Montanans across the state can be healthy because we fought to expand Medicaid in 2015. Leaving the legislature in 2016, my plan was to travel the West with my husband, continuing work with farmers and ranchers, me with Western Landowners Alliance, and he as a trusted advisor with his lifelong career with the NRCS. His passing changed that, but my commitment remains strong. Rural Montana embodies what's best. Your word is your bond. We help neighbors in need. And when you're the truck passenger, you're in charge of getting the gates. Times are tough, and who we send to Congress matters. I will show up and deliver. I've done it my whole career, unlike Matt Rosendale, who didn't show up today. I'll fight to lower healthcare costs, ensure all Montanans can succeed, and as a hunter and angler myself, protect what makes Montana the last best place. I'll represent you, not deep-pocketed special interests. I look forward to discussing our future. Thank you for joining.
Thank you. And let's turn it over to Tom Winter. Tom?
So thank you for having me. My name's Tom Winter. Many of you don't know me. I'm a 33-year-old state legislator representing Western Missoula County. It's one of the only rural districts held by a Democrat, and it's a district that voted for President Trump plus 11 points. I've had the privilege of living my entire adult life in Montana, but I wasn't born here. I was born in Kansas. I'm one generation removed from the ranch. On Sunday dinners, we'd hear endless stories about what it was like out in the Flint Hills, out in Smith Center. My grandmother and grandfather, they understood the precarity of ranching life. But they also understood the fulfillment of putting food on the nation's table. And sometimes how you have to be innovative to stay afloat. One of the only times my grandfather ever left the country was to go to Switzerland to import the Simmental breed of cattle. So if you ranch Simmental, there's a good chance it comes from the bull semen. My father and grandfather imported and then sold out of the back of a Chevy up and down the Rocky Mountain front in the 70s. But those same values that my grandfather brought to rural Kansas, community, hard work, and yes, innovation in the face of a pinch, they're under threat in Kansas and Montana. Our politics is broken. It extols the virtues of the small family farm, but it doesn't actually work to help the people who work the family farm. Our rural health care is broken. My grandparents wouldn't recognize the fractured care systems we have in our small towns. I want my kids, my grandfather's great-grandchildren, to have the opportunity to farm and ranch if they so choose. I want the prosperity of the city to be the prosperity of rural Montana as well. We say it all the time in my campaign. We work for working families. Whether you work in Billings or Glendive, we're going to work for you.
Thank you. We will alternate questions back and forth. Each candidate will have 60 seconds to answer the question. And Kathleen, we'll start with you with question number one that has been submitted to us from folks like the USCA, MCA, Northern Plains, and the Montana Farmers Union. Our first question is, under the threat of retaliatory tariffs, the 2015 Congress voted to repeal country of origin labeling, known as COOL. This repeal applies only for beef and pork. All other food products still have COOL. Soon after the repeal, multinational packers started putting a product of U.S. label on beef and pork that imported and repackaged. That's misleading to consumers. My question to you is, will you support reinstating mandatory country of origin labeling, Kathleen?
Absolutely. Consumers deserve and they want to know where their food comes from. And Montana produces the highest quality products in the world. I'm so proud of us. And it's really misleading, as you said, to mislabel Brazilian beef, which was banned in the past for health concerns, as a U.S. product just because it's being processed at a plant in the U.S. with an increasing trend of being foreign-owned, by the way. So we need to ensure that we don't knowingly mislead Montanans and the country. We need comprehensive country of origin labeling. And I think we didn't put enough of a fight up at the WTO. I'm ready to do that again and make sure we get across the finish line.
Okay. And Tom, I'd ask you the same question.
Well, thank you for the question. I agree with Ms. Williams on this. We need country of origin labeling because Montana consumers, American consumers, and foreign consumers need to know the origin of the beef they're eating. And more importantly, they need to know that the quality product comes from Montana ranchers. Now, all of this comes in the context of, however, I think a broken trade agreement system and a broken politics that privileges corporations, and I'd say people in other countries, over American producers of beef and consumers of beef and other products. That's why country of origin labeling is so important to bring back in this case, but also to see as kind of the litmus test for how we're going to go forward in our politics. And that politics needs to be centered on working people, working families, and COOL is simply one way by supporting that we can support their hard work in rural Montana.
I kind of want to follow up with that just a little bit. And Tom, I'm going to let you answer first, and then we'll give Kathleen a chance at this. Question is, should product of USA label be applied only to products that were born, raised, and processed in the USA? Tom?
Yes. And if 30 seconds. Yes, of course. I think that goes on with what we're saying. We see multinational corporations and packers specifically bringing in products from other parts of the world, processing them here and having them masquerade as quality Montana or American products. We can't have that. The hard work done in ranching communities and farming communities across the state and across rural America needs to be rewarded with labeling that is truthful to the actual origins of the product and the hard work that was put into that.
Okay, Kathleen, I'd ask you for an answer as well.
Yeah, so, I mean, it's not always simple. So there are cattle that are born in the U.S., go across the Canadian border, and then come back here to be finished and processed. So I think... And I used to be a delegate to a U.S.-Canadian trade organization where this issue would come up. So I think we can actually do a label that is that detailed. We're born, we're raised, we're processed, we're finished.
Okay. Let's go to the second question that we have, and we'll start with Tom this time. Tom, the question is, if you are elected to Congress, you will be writing a new farm bill. What key areas are you looking to improve on?
I think it's the Packers Act is where you start. It's like I was talking before, we need to ensure that our politics is no longer tilted toward multinational or national corporations or away from people who work the land or work with their hands or work in business in general. That's normal Montanans. That's rural Montana. And one of the things that the Packers Act has done and the way that it specifically has been undermined is we've seen in the way that it allows that corporations can have a chokehold on small rural producers, small family farms, ranches, etc. They have been allowed through the continued erosion of the Packers Act to be the chokehold and the choking mechanism so that they cannot get to market and that they can change the price for the consumer versus the price that we're seeing paid to the producer. And that's my biggest concern. It's simply the idea that the power center has shifted from individuals and families who work hard to corporations and national entities that don't really care about the way that rural life works in states like ours.
And get your thoughts on this, Kathleen.
Yeah, so I've worked quite a bit with the Farm Bill. At the Western Landowners Alliance, we worked hard to ensure that we had a farm bill last time around that worked better for the West. A lot of it was tailored to Middle East or mid-continent and cotton and peanuts. So we wanted to make sure that the farm bill worked for the West. I would say you asked about the farm bill. The Packers Act does need to be reformed, but that's not the farm bill. I would say one aspect of the farm bill we really need to tee up this time around is how farmers and ranchers can help in addressing climate change through ensuring that we have the tools that they can improve soil health and thereby capture and sequester more carbon and be compensated for it. So I think that's a wonderful place that we should start to reopen and talk about in the new farm bill that ensures them an additional diversification of their income and helps solve the problem.
Let's stay with you, Kathleen. And I want to ask this, because the trade wars depressed all agricultural commodity prices, the USDA created the Market Facilitation Program, or MFP. Traditional caps to the amount paid were removed, so ultimately most of the money went to a large corporations, not family farms. For instance, we recall the JBS, a Brazilian-owned packer, received over $100 million, while many Montana families' farms only received a few hundred dollars, and ranchers received basically nothing. Question is, what would you do to make sure the small businesses, family farms, and ranches receive needed support while preventing multinational corporations from raiding our treasury?
Kathleen?
Well, that's exactly. So if prices for beef are going up in the grocery store and the returns to producers are going down, then who's making out on that is the packers. So we need to make sure that we change the pricing system. I've heard some talk about ensuring that there's more transparency in the pricing system, requiring the packers to buy more product on the open market with cash purchases so that their formula pricing is adjusted and isn't artificially low. And then, if we invoke COOL as the law of the land, it will help us defend against these increasingly foreign owned packers bringing in foreign product and labeling it as U.S. and selling lesser quality beef when Montanans deserve to sell theirs.
Okay, and let's turn it over to Tom. Tom, if you would.
And I think the question with this market facilitation program and others is going to come up more often as we see the reverberations of the pandemic through our systems, specifically through our agricultural systems. We're going to be facing recession, if not an outright depression. There's going to need to be an argument, as Kathleen said, for working people and farmers. The market facilitation program is simply one way that we can do this. But the disjunct between the prices that are being paid by the packers and the prices paid in the grocery store are of concern. Senator Tester speaks about this often as well, and I'm speaking about it in my previous answer. We have to understand that the market is often broken for small producers, specifically in Montana. It will not be fixed. It will only be exacerbated by the coming depression or recession. And we need to strengthen market mechanisms, including the Packers Act and others, to ensure that rural producers can actually thrive in this coming difficult time.
I want to talk a little bit about a discussion that's been around for years now, is global warming or climate change. Tom, we start with you. How can agriculture and the government work together to address climate change? Tom?
Land use is truly one of the way that we use the land is truly one of the biggest predictors of how well we're going to grapple with the climate crisis. Climate change is one word. The climate crisis is happening now. Before, when I could actually get out of this kitchen in this house, I was able to go meet with farmers and ranchers across the state. They know what's happening. The people listening to this understand the threat we face because they're already seeing different rainfall patterns. They're already seeing floods when they shouldn't be there in the first place. This is hurting rural family farms. The way that the federal government can ensure that rural areas can actually prosper in the coming change to our communities and the coming change to our economy to go to renewable economy is by ensuring that the wealth that's created on the backs of rural areas in places like Seattle and Portland, that is transferred to rural areas, including through different tillage mechanisms, ensuring that we have carbon sequestration going on in our different farming practices. This could actually be a boon for rural areas. It is not the boogeyman that people would say it is. We can prosper and do right by our planet.
And let's turn to Kathleen. How can agriculture and the government work together to address climate change? Kathleen?
Yeah, well, I touched on this a little bit, but I will echo the same sentiment. Montana producers are some of the most astute observers of nature that I've ever met. They know that we're seeing earlier runoff and more intense fire seasons and more tornadoes, I'm told, in eastern Montana. And increased variability in planting and harvest time. There's even information now that some of our cattle breeds might not be able to be as productive in Montana if they can't recover at night if it's not cool enough. So we need to be prepared for the energy consumers of the future. We need to ensure that soil health and the opportunity to capture as much carbon as the transportation sector emits now is a creative element of how we address climate change in the future. We bring ag to the table as partners, and we make sure that we've got programs in place that help them stay on the land and address this problem.
I want to follow up with that, and we'll start with you, Kathleen. And the reason is I understand what you're saying, but how do we do it? How do we keep things clean?
Well, so improved soil health can be through increased rest rotation. It can be through cover crops. It can be through no-till. It's basically the practices that are going to allow those plants to create more capture nitrogen and create those carbon capturing processes in the soil. And I will mention that my likely Republican opponent in this race doesn't even think this is a problem. So I don't know how he can solve it.
And Tom, I'll ask you that too. How do we take care of this?
It's just going to be, this is the challenge of our generation. It's why it's such a big part of my campaign. It's why we don't take fossil fuel money. It's why we openly grapple with this issue. And as Ms. Williams said, we have people across the aisle. This is an issue. They disagree with your question at base. One of the things we need to do, because I think Kathleen largely went over this, there's ways to carbon farm, et cetera, how we can do this. The larger sense is to bring a politics that can actually be trusted so that we can speak to rural areas and speak with trust, understanding, and authority that this must be dealt with and can be done as well as a scientific answer. They have to work hand in hand.
Let's go on to the next question. This will be for Kathleen on this one. And the question is, the Holcomb fire and coronavirus have put a spotlight on our food supply system. It's broken. Since the beginning of the crisis, multinational packers have been charging 20% more for meat to consumers and paying 30% less to the producers. This, in the eyes of the Montana Farmers Union and others, is price gouging. What action would you take to promote a competitive and fair marketplace? Kathleen?
Well, so yes, and these are some consistent themes here. One of the things that I haven't talked about yet is my commitment to local food and the importance of local and regional food systems. And in the short term, with the packing plants really having trouble staying open and keeping their workers safe, we have got to invoke some flexibility in our local systems to allow, say, state inspectors to potentially inspect and get some muscle cuts out to grocery stores for them to do final processing. We can't even get beef to food banks without the USDA inspector bottleneck. So we need to be creative. We need to foster shares and co-ops and other local food systems. And I hope that if there's one silver lining that comes out of this entire pandemic is that people start buying more locally and realizing they want to know that they know their farmer.
Tom, let me ask you that question. What action do you take to promote a competitive and fair marketplace?
Well, I think it's so important to focus on the competitive and fair marketplace aspect, because right now we see federal policy tilted toward people who are working to actually change that policy to make it an unfair marketplace. The people that are hurt most when this happens, and as Ms. Williams was talking about during the stressors of a pandemic and the resulting depression and recession, are small family farmers and ranchers. Those are the people at the backbone of Montana communities. Again, on the Packers Act, it is simply one possible aspect writ large. It's the stranglehold of multinational corporations and national corporations on family farms and the rural way of life. The way it's been changed is that it accidentally strengthens their hand against rural Montanans. They use packer-owned livestock to insert unfair market that power. They freeze independent farmers out of the market and lower farm prices. I mean, the Packers Act came out of Teddy Roosevelt era antitrust legislation. We often see our Republicans across the aisle acting as if they are the true heirs to Teddy Roosevelt. I will happily be the Roosevelt Democrat in this case, working against large corporations for the little man so that he can provide food and also money for his family.
You're enjoying this debate brought to you by the USCA, MCA, Northern Plains, and the Montana Farmers Union. And we go to the next question. We want to deal with COVID-19. Obviously, it's very prevalent. This question will go to you, Tom. And the COVID-19 pandemic has highlighted the importance of the internet. People are working and studying from home, telemedicine, marketing, services, government portals, jobs, educational opportunities, debates, and more rely on the internet. Many in rural Montana lack broadband access. Tom, the question is, what will you do to ensure that all Montanans have access to broadband and cell service, Tom?
Look, economic opportunity in the 21st century in America is directly linked to access to infrastructure. We saw that, and the federal government and state government was aware of that in the previous century, in previous generations. But the FCC has to include broadband in its concept of universal service. I air quote that because universal service currently technically includes broadband, but we've had the telecoms companies be able to act like they don't have to provide it to rural areas because it's more expensive. What this does is it privileges people who live in the cities over people who live in rural areas when it shouldn't be the case. And I want to change that. But we also need to collect more through the Universal Service Fund at the FCC so that this essential infrastructure is available to all. That's the payment mechanism. And it wouldn't increase taxes. That's the other thing. What we have is a failure of the market to provide for rural areas broadband, which is needed for everyone. And more importantly, a failure of government to recognize and work for rural people in this case, because it's failed because it's been taken over by these large corporations. They simply don't work for rural areas, but they could with someone who cared and knew the difference.
And Kathleen, let me ask you that. How would you ensure that all Montanans have access to broadband and cell service?
Yeah, well, you mentioned, Jim, that internet access is a key requirement for so many ways that we survive, especially in rural Montana. I have been working on this issue for quite a while, and what I found is we need both information and investment. When I was trying to expand rural access in my home community, we could not even get maps of where there is and isn't coverage. And finally, at the federal level, a bill has just passed in March that makes the mapping a better so that we will know where we need to extend the coverage, and then we need to invest. And so just like rural electrification in the 30s, it's the same thing. It's an important utility that equalizes the playing field, and we can't survive without it. We need to make that scale of investment in ensuring we close this digital divide.
I want to ask this loaded question, and 60 seconds isn't going to be enough to answer this, but I'm going to throw it out there. Here's the question, and Kathleen, you'll have a chance to answer this first. Access to affordable and reliable health care is critically important to all Montanans. Years of low commodity prices have contributed to increasing stress on Montana farmers. Without health insurance, they are but one health event away from bankruptcy, and suicide is on the rise in rural Montana. Should the Affordable Care Act be strengthened more broadly, and how would you ensure affordable, reliable health care for all Montanans?
Well, this is a key issue for me. When I was 11, I became a caregiver with my father for my mother, who had early onset Alzheimer's. So I know what a healthcare crisis can do to a family, and I've been committed to working on healthcare issues through my legislative work and into Congress. So everyone deserves access to affordable, quality healthcare. There's too many going without. Part of my proposal is to allow people 55 and older to buy into Medicare. That would lower prices or costs immediately in both Medicare and the individual market. We need to bargain for drug prices. That would save $11 billion that we could use to save in other areas. We need to fully fund CHIP and the community health center funds, which are so important in rural Montana, protect Medicare and Medicaid, recruit more providers into rural Montana, ensure that we have mental health services, and boy, are we different than Matt Rosendale on this issue, who doesn't even believe in protecting for pre-existing conditions.
Tom, I'll turn it over to you.
60 seconds is not going to be long enough. As Ms. Williams said, there are differences between all of us in this race. I am here because of the failure of our healthcare system. I have family with chronic illness. I saw what the cheap lottery of life that it means that if you end up being ill, you don't have the same opportunity as others. What we see in the Montana rural-urban divide is the same thing. If you have the misfortune in the rural healthcare sense to live in rural areas, you don't have as good a healthcare as they do in Missoula and Bozeman. That's just the truth. And the idea that allowing only 55 plus to buy into Medicare or Medicaid, it's not going to make a difference for anyone beneath that age. We need to have actual fundamental reform. We can increase the multiples paid for Medicare and Medicaid to critical access hospitals. We can do many things to strengthen the ACA, but we have to work for healthcare for all. Healthcare is a right for every American. We cannot means test or geography test access to life-saving medications or healthcare in general. My campaign is about bringing healthcare for all, specifically for people who need it the most, and that's in rural areas.
And I think you're right. I mean, we all know that we could talk about healthcare for this entire hour, but we do have a lot of different subjects we want to get to. This question will go to Tom, and our next question is the CSKT Water Compact. It was ratified in the Montana's legislation in 2015. Now, however, it must be ratified by Congress in order to be finalized. The question is, do you support the compact? And if so, what would you do in Congress to see it ratified, Tom?
Well, look, so as the sole representative in the U.S. House for the state of Montana and of the 8 federally recognized reservations in the state as well, it's a special relationship that I have to have, and a very important one between the tribes and the federal government and then their individual U.S. citizens that make up the reservations. In this case, you know, supporting the CSKT Water Compact is a no-brainer. We've been talking about this, and Ms. Williams has as well, for decades. This must be done, if only to provide there will be continuity and an understanding of where water resources will be. It's fair and it's appropriate. More so than that, though, the litmus test of any person representing Montana has to be, what do our tribal brothers and sisters have to say about this? They are sovereign nations with compacts with the federal government of which we represent. I will do everything I can to get the CSKT compact signed and put across the president's desk, and also ensure that we continue this harmonious relationship that we need to be working on continually between the federal government and the tribes, because for 200 years, I'm not going to say it's gone very well. This is one step in the right direction, but it's a small one.
And Kathleen, I'll give you the chance to answer that question too.
Yeah, so we know producers can't survive without secure water rights. My specialty over my 37-year career in natural resources has been in water. And I've had the honor of working on several compacts and being one of the lead negotiators on the CSKT compact. So this compact solves lots of problems while addressing the very real threat of a significant disruption in water rights and allocation across half of Montana. If it's not finalized. And there is a clock ticking on it that that is quite significant. Not only does it clarify tribal water rights, but it also protects state-based rights. It resolves some endangered species issues. It legalizes illegal wells that were built, that were drilled since 1996. It provides water for economic development. We need someone in Congress that knows this compact back and forth and that will fight to get over the finish line. Matt Rosendale voted against it. He said wait until everyone agreed. Well, that's naive. We need to get it across the finish line, and I'll be the champion to do it.
I want to stay with you, Kathleen, and ask you this one. Markets obviously are huge. And after the Japan bilateral agreement, USMCA and China phase one deals were signed. The already low agricultural commodity markets went down or stayed the same. And then within weeks of signing the phase one deal, China bought 1 million tons of wheat from Australia, Canada, and France, and not one bushel from the United States. Now we are selling less to those countries now that we did before. The question is, what are your plans to help get those markets back? Kathleen?
So, yeah, big mistake. Producers need and deserve stable and predictable markets. Every business does, right? We've worked, Montanans have worked to create those markets, and those are now at risk, if not already being lost. Montana farmers worked for 50 years to develop a strain of wheat that was attracted to Japan. And as you mentioned, now we're losing market share to Canada and Australia. Once you lose market share, it is so hard to get it back. I was calling foul as soon as the announcement of potential steel and aluminum tariffs was that we heard over 2 years ago. The guy who's in the seat right now wouldn't even sign a letter to the president urging caution with tariffs. We need to ensure that Congress pulls back the authority for economic foreign policy that they have abdicated over the last 40 years. And I will work to do that in Congress and make sure that it's the policymakers that are making foreign economic policy.
And Tom, let's ask you, what are your plans to help get our markets back?
First off, there has to be a decent change from what's happened with Representative Gianforte and President Trump. They have not done right by rural Montana. Right now, we see our trade agreements, especially in commodity crops across the state, we see them hostage to essentially the whims of the president. That's a question that you can take away from President Trump, President Obama. We need to ensure that the thing that Ms. Williams and I are running for, which is the Congress of the United States of America, reclaims its rightful role as being the arbiter of these trade agreements, rather than watching them go up and down with the political winds in the country. Because I can guarantee you that someone in the suburbs of Cleveland, they don't particularly care about how things go in the USMCA. The way that we've renegotiated NAFTA, USMCA, the way that the TPP went, it hurt Montana producers. And Ms. Williams is right in this case. But that's because it's been taken over by politics, rather than the needs of working people in Montana to get their superior products to market, not only in the country, but outside as well, in East Asia and other places. We need to change that and make sure that we have actually the Congress asserting its authority, not the president.
I'm Tom, yes. Let's stay with you, Tom, and ask our next question. We go back to COVID-19. It has caused a disruption in our food supply. Large packing plants are shutting down, and yet our local butchers cannot slaughter for sale. Food safety policies can and should protect consumers without limiting farmers, ranchers, and small food processors who sell into local markets. How will you promote local food production and marketing opportunities, Tom?
Look, traditional pathways of local agriculture onto local tables have been broken for a while. We're aware of that. Hinterlands for markets from cities to towns to rural areas have been degrading for quite some time. We need to rebuild them. But so before we talk about how these food safety policies specifically in this case can be changed, we need to rebuild these connections in the first place between town and country. They need to strengthen towns and cities and their rural foodways, essentially. One way we can do that is ensure that SNAP benefits, farm-to-school programs can be used at larger and multiple farmers' markets. This isn't specific in the Montana context, but this can be in the federal role, too. We can do that to privilege locally produced goods over ones produced outside of the the state and not locally. We can also ensure in this case that the heavy hand of government isn't used by large corporations in these cases to squeeze out the local producers. It's absolutely insane that we should be having wheat produced in another part of the country being consumed in our schools in Glendive. It needs to be made here. And that privileging of the local over the national, the provincial over the national, is what's part of my campaign and why I'm fighting in this case. It's why we've seen rural incomes fall.
Tom, thank you. And let's turn it over to you, Kathleen. Same question, please.
Yeah, so what I mentioned about proposals allowing state inspectors to bridge the gap right now and allow local processors to do some of the processing and then grocery stores to finish up may be a good stopgap measure while we're while our food system is going through some tough times. I will say too that I am an advocate for local food for many, many, many years. One of the bills that I had in the state house was a cottage food bill that not only fixed a mess of our food laws, but also created over 200 new businesses and over 3,000 new Montana products in just 3 years. So yeah, farm to school, farm to table, farm to dorm, farm to chef. All of that creates not only support for our local producers, but at the scale that we can start to bring middle processors into the market and ensure we've got more value-added opportunities as well.
I kind of want to stay in that same line of conversation with our future of farmers. I want to talk a little bit about young farmers. The average age of farmers and ranchers in Montana is 57. Fewer young people are returning to the family operation, and it's vitally important to start their own operation. So the question to you, Kathleen, is what can be done to support beginning and young farmers?
So we have got to get young farmers back to the land. There are so many young people that are so interested in raising food. It's one of the most, the sustainable ag program at MSU is one of the most popular programs. They had to hire new staff to accommodate the demand. But there's a disconnect in being able to get young farmers back to the land, whether it's a lack of access to land tenure, whether it's lack of access to capital. There are some programs in the Farm Bill, the new and young farmers programs that are somewhat helpful. But we really need to explore the bottlenecks and ensure that we can get young people back to the land. We've been telling the stories of young people that are going back to the land and how they're doing it. And we need to do more of that and ensure that we're removing those bottlenecks. There's so much potential and we have to do it.
And Tom, let's give you a chance to answer that.
Look, this huge problem isn't going to be solved simply by one farm bill. This is a generational question. This is a generational question that goes beyond rural areas to urban areas and really the future of the country. Why is it that the young generation now graduates college with a first mortgage to pay for it? Why is it that incomes are lower than they were for previous generations? It's because we have a system that privileges, I would say, larger corporations over the people that work, working families, working people. This is not just a rural question. You don't have to shoehorn it into any issue. In my case, in the state legislature, I authored innovative legislation that would have zeroed out loan payments on colleges for anyone who was from Montana that went to a Montana school that decided to stay and work in Montana. We have to end the rural brain drain. We have to offer opportunity in rural areas in agriculture for young people. The reason they're not staying is because we have federal policy that makes it difficult to stay. That makes it difficult to make a living. And acknowledgement of that base is the first way you get to start to fixing the problem.
I want to talk about some renewable energy because I think that's very important in the future. And Tom, this will go to you. Renewable energy has become an important source of income for many property owners, workers, and states. What are the plans? What would be your plans for renewable energy economy?
A renewable energy economy is the only place we can go. And there's a reason we're called the Big Sky State, right? We got a big sky. We got a lot of sun. We got a lot of wind. We can actually take advantage of our closeness and our proximity to major markets on the West Coast. We not only can export from the same lands, you can export wheat, you can also export electric energy from wind turbines and from sun. This is something that we can and must do. A full-throated understanding and support of this can be done at the federal level as well. We already see Montanans making money off renting their land or ensuring that they can't actually make renewable energy on their land that they otherwise farm or ranch. We can continue that for more robust processes as the country does the absolutely necessary work of changing to a renewable economy. This is, again, like I said before, a way that we can bring wealth back to rural areas from the places that have been creating it off the backs of rural areas, such as Seattle. They need not only our food, but they need our power too. We can sell both to them.
And Kathleen, if you would please.
So, yeah, I talk a lot about making sure that we are prepared for the energy consumers of the future. There was a story that as one of the investors in Colstrip pulled out, they're going to invest in wind energy in Wyoming. Why Wyoming? Why not here? Right? So we need to make sure that as the energy consumers of the future demand that clean and renewable energy, that we're on the forefront of being able to provide it. Part of making renewables practical is breaking through the battery storage block. We need to make sure that we have technology that allows us to store that renewable energy, and that will make it just so much more viable. There's a company up in Columbia Falls that has been working on really creative battery storage. And then I think we have a great economic opportunity to electrify our transportation system and make sure that Montana is benefiting from doing so and also solving our climate problem.
So let me ask you this, Kathleen, on a follow-up. What is the best direction to go? Is it solar, wind, hydro? What would be your answer here? 30 seconds to give me your direction on this.
I don't think it's just one. I mean, it's got to be a combination. It's got to be what's appropriate for the land. Obviously, there's more wind in Judith Gap than there is in Gallatin Gateway. So it depends. And we certainly have opportunities for solar. Much more broadly, we need to work with Northwestern Energy, frankly, on encouraging integrating these ideals into our utility system.
Thank you. And Tom, that same question. Is there one better than the other? Is there a certain direction we should go?
A congressman is only one of 435 people, and they're not necessarily experts in this. Let the market decide. Rural people who have been involved in commodity production of crops, they understand that the market will decide what is best with the guiding hand of the government and ensuring that people aren't taken advantage of. I truly believe that all of the above is, of course, the truth here, and it's the only way we can fix this absolute pickle we put ourselves in. But at the same time, this isn't a question for individual congressmen to decide, put a wind farm here, put pumped hydro there. It's the question for the markets to get there so that we can find true answers.
Very good answers to questions, guys. And I know they're loaded questions. I wish we had more time to expand on all of our questions. But we do want to give you a chance. We're going to give you 90 seconds for your closing comments here. And we will start with you, Tom, your closing comments for our debate.
Well, first off, thank you, Montana Farmers Union, sponsors. It's an absolute privilege to be in front of you. This was not the life plan I had for myself, public service, and certainly not to be doing this in my kitchen during a pandemic. Look, I'm one of the few Democrats to represent a largely rural district in the State House. I'm the only Democrat in front of you that has won over rural districts that have voted for President Trump plus 11 points. I did that by focusing on the real issues, the real strengths of Montana. It's not partisan to say that we take care of one another out here. It's how we get to health care for all in my campaign. It's not partisan to acknowledge that our politics serves working corporations over working people. It's how our campaign focuses and centers our politics back on working and struggling families in towns and cities and rural areas. And it's not partisan to say that we can do better. That our broken politics has failed rural Montana and agricultural producers for a generation. People in D.C. always extol the virtues of rural life. Democrat, Republican, it doesn't matter. The family farm is sacrosanct. But they know that they also have not given them the tools to survive a difficult economy. But I aim to change that. I'm going to bring the hopeful, community-focused politics of Montana to doing business in D.C. so that we can have a politics that truly serves working people on farms and ranches, but also in the towns, rather than just paying lip service to it like everyone else does. So I hope you can join us. It really has been a privilege, but we have so much more work to do to bring change. So I hope you'll help us out. Vote for us. We're doing everything we can to bring the Montana perspective to D.C.
Thank you, Tom. And Kathleen, we'll give you 90 seconds as well because of the length of our questions and answers. We're going to give you a full minute and a half. Do it, please.
Thank you. Thank you again to the organizers of this forum and to all of you for joining us by TV and radio. As you've heard, rural Montana and its farmers and ranchers hold a very special place in my heart and in my career. I've never wavered from my commitment to building a stronger Montana for all. When I first met the man who would become my husband, one of the many reasons I was smitten was that we both had the same favorite book, Ivan Doig's Dancing at the Rascal Fair. That's partially set along Montana's Rocky Mountain front. In it, the narrator invites the reader to come here and stand under my skin and find out what this is like. That's what a true representative does. Then she gets to work. Times are tough. Who we send to Congress matters. You deserve someone who'll be accessible, knows how to get things done, and will show up and deliver, something I've done my whole life. I'm ready to be your champion in Congress. I ask for your vote in the June 2nd primary and also again in November. Thank you so much.
We appreciate it. Thank you so very, very much for both of you. Great answers to some loaded questions, obviously, and we really appreciate your answers. Of course, as you mentioned, June 2nd will be the election. It is a mail-out ballot, and you will send that back in before we break it down and have our final contestants in who will run for Congress. We do want to say thank you to the USCA, the MCA, and Northern Plains, along with the Montana Farmers Union for hosting this debate here and give you a chance to make an informed decision with our candidates that are here. We appreciate it so very much. Election June 2nd. Thank you for joining us right here, and make sure you get out and vote.
Back here in studio from the Northern News Network, I'm Tom Schultz, host of Voices of Montana. Thank you for joining us tonight. Heard some good exchanges, I thought, on the part of both parties, and then on critical issues facing rural Montana, as in last week's gubernatorial debate, but this week more on that federal level, country of origin labeling, increasing rural broadband services, also protecting our rural health care systems, important issues for rural Montana. We'll take a quick break and get some post-debate reactions from Montana Farmers Union President Walter Schweitzer. So back with more in just a moment.
Howdy, this is Walter
Do you need help? Information about resources such as emergency food, housing, financial, or other social assistance? Simply dial 211 and get connected with a trained professional for information and referrals to available resources. Montana 211 is a free, confidential service available 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, to connect people in need with people who can help. Those experiencing emotional stress, are in crisis, suicidal, or worried about someone can also call this number to reach a trained crisis counselor. 211 in southwestern Montana is answered by the Help Center. Go to montana211.org for more information.
When you call into your financial institution, hi.
Parenthood is an adventure, but with Achieve Montana, Montana's 529 plan, saving for your child's college education is simple. Our investment options are designed for tax benefits now and college savings for the future. Because you have other things to worry about right now, like enjoying every moment. Open a college savings account for as little as $25 at AchieveMontana.com. Visit AchieveMontana.com for a disclosure statement. Read and consider it carefully before investing. This message sponsored by Achieve Montana in cooperation with the Montana Broadcasters Association.
Business. The Supreme Court decides cases like permits on natural resources and how you manage employees. Over the next 2 weeks, we'll interview justice candidates live on Voices of Montana with Tom Schultz. Join us. We're the Montana Chamber of Commerce, and we mean business.
I'm Tom Schultz again. Good to have you here tonight. We are joined again by Walter Schweitzer. He's the president of one of the main sponsors of this debate. That's the Montana Farmers Union. Good evening, Walter. Again, I appreciate your time here. Just going to open up the floor to a general comment or your thoughts on tonight's debate.
Well, you know, they obviously, a lot of these candidates did their homework.
Yeah.
And they had an understanding of the ag issues. I didn't necessarily agree with some of their answers, but, and I, you know, the one thing is I appreciated the candidates who had more specifics. You know, some candidates really didn't get to the issue, didn't answer the question. And I appreciated the candidates that answered the question with some specifics, even if I didn't agree with them.
Yeah, yeah, and you could see that. You're right. What key issues did you see then, maybe some separation on? And let's go Republican side, then Democratic side, because it's obviously this primary still. There was some, I thought, on the CSKT, a country of origin labeling. I know that's a big issue for the Montana Farmers Union. Climate change. What stands out in terms of separation on these issues on the Republican side?
Well, you know, the first thing I want to say is I'm kind of excited about our chances of getting cool as the law of the land again, because, you know, in the Republican primary, most of the candidates there spoke in support of cool. You had Stapleton who wanted a voluntary cool, which of course we already have, but And this is a little bit of a sea change from what happened in 2015 when they repealed Kuhl, largely on partisan lines, with mostly Republicans voting to repeal Kuhl. So I'm kind of excited that we have a chance to maybe get Kuhl as a law of the land again.
Yeah, and you saw that, too, on the Democratic side of things. Was there anything between Kathleen Williams and Tom Winter that stood out in terms of separation?
Well, I think Kathleen probably had a little better understanding of the ag issues and how Congress works. I think they both, as all the candidates, saw that these monopolies that we have processing food is not a secure food supply. And I appreciate Kathleen again with specifics about how she wanted to empower our state to allow our local butchers to be able to butcher and process for sale. And you know what? Deborah Lamb talked about it in the Republican side as well. And I think that is critical. Right now, our meat counters are liable to be empty in the next couple of weeks because of these large centralized packers shutting down. And I've got butchers 10 minutes away on each side of me that process meat for me, but they can't process it for sale. That's wrong.
Yeah, I think there's going to be, you know, and for my end, I appreciated a lot of Joe Dooling's answers. Of course, he is a farmer and a rancher. And so when, you know, you talk about the meat packers, he has got specifics there, too. But don't you think there's going to be and good to see a lot of real heat on the meat packers coming out of this, not only COVID-19, but the 2020 elections?
I think so, too. And I think on all centralized processors. And I, too, agree with what you said, Tom. Joe Dooling does have a better understanding of the ag issues than the other candidates in the Republican primary. And that was clear in the debate. You know, there was one candidate that I'm not even so sure he understands agricultural issues, that John Ivankovich. He seems pretty sharp, but I just don't think he, and he admitted it, that he doesn't have much experience with ag issues.
Yeah, and he did seem pretty sharp, and I haven't seen a whole lot of him. I know that he's was an electrician in the oil field, and I was actually, I think all these candidates, this was great exposure for them, and I thought they all, I would, if I'm any one of those, I go home feeling like, you know, that wasn't so bad. It was a not a bad performance by any of them. Well, I appreciate your time here tonight, Walter. I know that's a busy season for you as a producer as well. But again, our thanks to the Northern Plains Resource Council, the Montana Cattlemen's Association, the United States Cattlemen's Association for sponsorship here as well, and also for the Montana Farmers Union. We'll talk to you down the road, okay, Walter?
Yeah, and thank you for doing this.
Yeah, thank you. So we'll take a break and wrap it up here. This is the Montana Farmers Union Congressional Primary Debate on the Northern News Network.
KGVM thanks Wild Joe's Coffee Spot for their support. To order beans, tea, and takeout for delivery Wednesday through Sunday, call 586-1212 or go to wildjoescoffee.com.
The Greater Gallatin United Way, together with the Bozeman Area Community Foundation, have joined together to launch the Southwest Montana COVID-19 Response Fund. This fund has been put in place to rapidly mobilize resources to meet increased needs in our local communities resulting from the COVID-19 pandemic. Those wishing to help people and organizations most impacted during the outbreak in Southwest Montana are encouraged to donate to the Response Fund. One of their philanthropic partners, AMB West Philanthropies, is supporting the launch of this coordinated effort with a $100,000 challenge grant to help leverage donations to the fund by providing a match for the first $100,000 raised. If you'd like to consider making a donation to the fund, you can find more information at greatergallatinunitedway.org on the internet. Right, you are tuned to KGVM Bozeman. We are the audio mirror of the Gallatin Valley. You can find us on your radio dial at 95.9 FM, and you can find us online at kgvm.org. We've got just a few seconds left here, and then we'll wrap up the debate broadcast, and then we'll keep going with some music for the rest of the evening. Thanks for tuning in. Hope you found this useful.
Girl Scouts, learn more.
Time to close this one out. Again, thanks to tonight's debate sponsors at your hometown radio stations especially, and then to Northern Plains Resource Council, Montana Cattlemen's Association, and the United States Cattlemen's Association. Due to the pandemic, the primary election this year in Montana is going to be an all mail-in ballot. And those ballots are going to be mailed out starting May 8th. They're going to be due at your local election offices by 8 p.m. on June 2nd. And if you voted in the last general election, you should automatically be sent a ballot. However, if you have moved since then, or perhaps changed your name or have other special circumstances, or maybe you haven't even registered to vote, you'll want to check your voting status with the Montana Secretary of State's office. Go to SOSMT, as in Montana, SOSMT.gov, and you'll find the help that you need there. Remember, it's not just the congressional races here. As in last week, we heard this debate on the gubernatorial side of things, the U.S. Senate primary races, several primary races for local and state elected offices as well. So please take the time to learn more about the candidates and then also be a part of this great representative republic here. And of course, you can always listen to our daily program. I say it's ours because it's you and I, and then of course the rest of the team here at Northern News Network. So I'm Tom Schultz. The program's called Voices of Montana, and we have been covering Montana issues for more than 20 years. I look forward to hearing from you. Thanks again for joining us. You've been listening to the Montana Farmers Union Congressional Primary Virtual Debate. This has been a presentation of the Northern News Network.
All right, and that wraps up the debate tonight. Again, I hope you found that useful. We did air a debate between the Democratic candidates for the U.S. House seat earlier, and we've got that debate available on our website, kgvm.org, under Election 2020. We've got a number of different debates that have been held as virtual town halls that we've recorded and broadcast, and we've got them available for your listening pleasure at any time. So I urge you strongly to take advantage of these resources, try to find some information out about the candidates before the election, see where they stand on issues, and how that lines up with what you think about the direction that we should be traveling. So we'll have this available on the website, and we'll probably broadcast it again in the coming week or so. Be an engaged and responsible voter. It's not just a right. It is a responsibility, in my not so humble opinion.